Hello, and welcome to this podcast summary of the fair value measurement standard that has been issued today. My name is Mark Byatt, Director of Communications for the IFRS Foundation and the IASB, and I'm joined today by Hilary Eastman, Project Manager for Fair Value Measurement, and Warren McGregor, Member of the IASB. Hello.
Hello, Mark.
Well, perhaps let's get started straight away. Warren, can you provide a little bit of background on the standard? Why did you publish IFRS 13? What's behind it?
Mark, we began work on fair value measurement standard quite some time ago. Now, it was actually back in 2005, and at the time, it was evident to us, and had been for some time, that whilst we had quite a deal of guidance in our literature dealing with fair value measurement, that was actually spread through the literature. It was in some cases overlapping. The guidance, I think some felt, was inconsistent, in fact, in certain cases. And we saw it as a need very much to try and bring all this together in the one place, to have a single standard. It actually didn't, interestingly, begin life as a joint project with the Financial Accounting Standards, but although it actually ended up being a joint project, and in fact a very important convergence project between the two of us. And I think that perspective is important to underline, because a lot of pressure's been on us to try and end up with the same standard. So to a large extent, and this will become evident as we go through this podcast, I think we have ended up in that place. So let me just mention a couple of things. We have taken the view jointly with the FASB that fair value should mean the same thing regardless of the markets in which transactions take place, and also that users of financial statements should have access to the same information around the world, and so that information should emanate from a consistent approach and result in essentially the same disclosures. I think the global financial crisis had an important impact on this project, not so much in terms of the impetus for the project actually getting underway, because we started it before the crisis, but I think it underscored the need for the requirements regarding fair value measurement to be the same, that is, FASB's and our own. And in fact, not only that the requirements should be the same, but the wording of the standard should be identical, because that was quite an issue during the crisis as to whether or not we had different requirements because we had different words. The crisis also actually made it clear to us that there was a need for greater transparency about fair value measurements, particularly those that are derived using what we call level three measurements, where you have unobservable inputs. And so we did work with the FASB to try and make that transparency available. I think in closing on this particular question, Mark, it's important to for our listeners to note that this is has been an MOU project, and our completion of it jointly with FASB delivers on that MOU commitment and also delivers on a key G20 recommendation.
And part of the response to the financial crisis in general, I guess.
Yeah.
So I've heard this referred to as a standard that deals with how rather than when to apply fair value measurement. So what do you mean by that?
Well, as I indicated previously, we focused on this because we were concerned about the requirements being spread across our literature. And so what we were trying to do, and have, I believe, done, is to bring all of those various bits and pieces concerning fair value measurement and disclosure into the one place, so that we now have a single IFRS. So it's really a lot to do with geography, Mark. It's not meant at all to change which assets or liabilities are going to be measured at fair value in the statement of financial position. Although it's true to say, in developing the standard, we did look at each of our various requirements regarding fair value measurement to determine just what we thought those requirements were actually intending for that fair value measurement to achieve, as part of that process of determining what the measurement objective actually should be in the standard, and we'll talk about that a little in a moment.
Okay. I've heard that the standard defines fair value as an exit price, which I think is a change from perhaps what we've had before. Hilary, talk a little bit about that, whether it's appropriate and how you got to that decision.
Yeah, the current definition of fair value in IFRS is before IFRS 13 came out, was a neutral exchange amount between knowledgeable willing parties. And that definition didn't take the perspective of either the seller's side or the buyer's side. And so depending on the situation, different companies could apply it differently. And obviously that's not an ideal situation, because then you get to inconsistencies in application. And one of the things that the board had to consider in defining fair value was, first of all, the starting point was what the FASB had done, which is define fair value as an exit price in FAS 157, and also to look at each use of the term fair value to see if it was consistent with the exit price from the seller's perspective or entry price from the buyer's perspective. One thing that became evident is that there isn't always an entry price for a particular asset or liability. So if there's not an actual transaction price, like with in a business combination for assets acquired or liabilities assumed, then you have to somehow come up with that entry price. And so you're still in the current market-based measurement situation. So another thing with entry price is that it can also contain entity-specific elements, because you're looking at what the entity either actually did or what it would do, which might be different from what market participants would do. And since fair value is a market-based measurement, we don't want to have any specific factors influencing it to the extent that they differ from what market participants would do. Before deciding to define fair value as an exit price, though, the board wanted to look at everywhere that fair value was used in IFRSs to make sure that the definition as an exit price was consistent with the measurement objective in each of those standards. And in some cases, that was clear. So for remeasurements or for assets held for sale, it's clear that that's an exit price measurement objective. In other cases, it's not clear, and so the board had to consider potential differences between entry and exit, and then there's clearly a conceptual difficulty with using an exit price for initial recognition. So in a business combination, it's hard for people to think about using an exit price when they've just bought something. The analysis of the standard showed, though, that even though there are conceptual differences between entry and exit, the actual measurement would not be different in many cases. So if there is a difference between entry and exit, the number that would be on the statement of financial position wouldn't be different depending on the objective you used. But in to make sure that we weren't having any practical problems with defining fair value as an exit price, even in cases where maybe entry price is conceptually what they wanted to do, that we had did a standard-by-standard review asking interested parties to look at each of the uses of fair value and to tell us what they were interpreting those uses in practice as either an exit price or an entry price. And we got feedback from about 50 people, including preparers, users, and auditors of financial statements. So it was a good feedback and a good sample, I think, of what people were doing. But because there are those conceptual differences between entry and exit, IFRS 13 does describe some of the areas where the board found there could be differences between those two objectives. Those include transactions that take place in different markets or at different units of accounts, or transactions between related parties.
Okay, thank you. Now, clearly there was a lot of interest in the whole fair value measurement mark-to-market activities during the financial crisis. And some are interested in whether this is specific to financial instruments accounting or whether there are broader considerations, particularly in terms of the focus on exit price. Warren, was the board's intention to focus on financial instruments?
No, but I can understand why some people might think that that was a prime motivation. And as you say, there was certainly a heavy focus on accounting for financial instruments during the global financial crisis. But as I mentioned earlier, our objective and our motivation stems from circumstances before the crisis itself. And as I think we've made clear in the document, this is a standard that applies to any asset or liability that's required to be measured at fair value. And in our literature, those familiar with IFRS would be aware that there are often circumstances where you are required to value at fair value assets or liabilities that are not financial instruments. And the most obvious example is in the context of a business combination where most assets and liabilities that are acquired in a business combination must be valued at fair value at initial recognition. But also, in our literature, unlike the FASBs at this stage, we have quite a lot of requirements in relation to fair value measurement for non-financial assets. In particular, we have requirements in IAS 16, property, plant and equipment, IAS 38, intangible assets, which have options for valuing at fair value post initial recognition. Investment property, there is a fair value measurement alternative and a requirement in IAS 41, biological assets, for measurement at fair value. So to sum up, Mark, the principles in IFRS 13 are relevant to all types of assets and liabilities. But we make it clear in the standard itself that where there's a focus on a particular type, then specific guidance is provided. And example of that is that there is actually a section on financial instruments and there is a section on non-financial assets.
Okay. Hilary, you've talked about assets and liabilities. What about an entity's own equity instruments?
The standard focuses mainly on assets and liabilities just because that's what we tend to talk about in accounting. But there are situations where an entity's own equity instruments are measured at fair value, and IFRS 13 is relevant for those as well. Some examples that have come up, particularly in the U.S., are in a business combination when contingent consideration is issued as part of a business combination, and the contingent consideration would be classified as equity, and there are questions on how you actually go about measuring that. And because Topic 820 wasn't clear on it, our exposure draft from May 2009 had some more guidance, but the final standard has a pretty extensive body of guidance that combines it with liabilities because the principles are the same. And that's, I think, going to be helpful for people going forward in those areas.
Okay. Warren, perhaps you could summarise really what are the main changes compared to current practice?
Well, first of all, let me say, Mark, that there are not many changes from current IFRS. As I mentioned earlier, this is about geography principally, and we're not introducing new requirements in terms of measurement of assets and liabilities at fair value that are currently not required to be measured at fair value. However, there are some differences, and I think it's worth just summarising them if I can. Let me focus first of all on the question of measurement. The most important notion, if you like, the document articulates and does represent in a sense a change is to make the measurement objective explicit. And that is that the measurement objective is an exit price. There's also different guidance in relation to the use of bid and ask prices. And also the document is explicit about the market in which transactions are assumed to take place, namely the principal market for the asset or liability, or in the absence of a principal market, the most advantageous market. In our existing literature, there are actually some inconsistencies as to which market you would look to. So we've made that clear. With respect to disclosures, once again, there's not a lot of change because our current literature does already include a range of disclosure requirements. But let me just again point out a couple of changes that have taken place. The three-level hierarchy that's articulated in the document in terms of measurement of fair value is now made much more explicit in respect of non-financial instruments. Secondly, there is now a specific requirement to disclose the significant inputs used for level 3 fair value measurements. And basically, that means companies must now provide numbers. And thirdly, the descriptions of sensitivity analysis and the valuation process used by the company will be required. And these were actually included, these notions were included in the expert advisory panel's report that was provided to the board at the request of the board during the financial crisis. From a valuation perspective, finally, Mark, the biggest change is likely to be in the justification of market participant assumptions about highest and best use, and also inputs that are used in the valuation, and in identifying the principal market for the asset or liability that's being measured at fair value, as I mentioned before.
Okay, thank you. Now, Hilary, we talk in the announcement about IFRS 13 and Topic 820 in US GAAP being almost identical. So what does almost identical mean?
That's a good question. We have worked very hard. I think both boards have agreed to align the wording. So what the FASB agreed to do was to amend Topic 820 to align the wording with how an international standard would have to look. So obviously there are some items that are pretty U.S.-centric that were in FAS 157 and now in Topic 820 that are just terms that we wouldn't use outside the U.S. And so the FASB agreed to kind of internationalize those terms. So, and because, as Warren mentioned before, there was a concern in the credit crisis that because we had different wording, we might have different requirements, it was important that the words be identical. So when the requirements are the same, the words are, you know, are the same. And the work that we've done to write the standard has, I think, shown that we've made a huge effort to do that, and quite successfully, I think. There are a few differences that we couldn't avoid, and one of those we never will be able to avoid is differences in American and British spelling and grammar. Some differences, though, are a result from having different requirements in other parts of IFRS's or US GAAP. The two biggest examples of that is with regard to using the net asset value as a measure of fair value for an investment in an investment company. The ISB wasn't able to permit the practical expedient that's in Topic 820 today because we do have different accounting there. But the boards are working together to resolve those differences, and so at some point in time that could be aligned. And additionally, IFRS 13 requires a quantitative sensitivity analysis for financial instruments that are in Level 3 of the fair value hierarchy. That requirement was carried over from IFRS 7. Topic 820 doesn't have the same requirement, but the ISB's view was they didn't want to take that away, particularly given the financial crisis. And so that is a difference at this time, but it's you know, up to the boards to decide to align that later on.
Okay, thank you. So, Warren, when will IFRS 13 become effective?
1st of January 2013, and we will permit early adoption. And the market's going to be prospective applications, so companies will be applying this going forward, and we will not be requiring disclosure of comparatives on initial application. Mark, if you don't mind, I'd just like at this point, if I could, to thank all those that provided input to us during the course of this project, whether through the formal comment letter process or through outreach activities, roundtables and the like. It is actually a major project of the board. It brings together concepts, disclosures and so on into the one place. It's going to make it a lot easier, I think, to understand what's required and apply in practice. And we couldn't have achieved that without the tremendous input we've received from our constituents. So a big thank you to them, and also If I could add a big thank you to our staff, both here and at the FASB, who have worked tirelessly on this project and produced a very good outcome.
Okay, that's good to hear. Of course, we're also publishing today a project summary and feedback statement that provides a summary of the feedback that we received through that consultation process and how the board has responded to that feedback. We have some other standards that are in some ways related that we're also publishing today, consolidations, disclosure, and
joint arrangements,
right, which are also available details on the website. Okay, well, Hilary, Warren, thank you very much for your time. I should remind listeners to this podcast that these are the personal views of Hilary and Warren and do not necessarily represent the formal position of the IASB. Further details are available on the project section of the IASB website. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.